an update and our final update to Notegate. Producer Charlie Borges has confessed. It was a team effort to find the culprit. Joel did very little because he looked at the video feed and he didn't see Charlie in the background. Greg spotted it, though. A real detective type of effort, Joel, from Greg tonight.
I would say so.
It was Sherlock Holmesian, you could say, his effort. A Nancy Drew sort of accomplishment for him. In the shades of Columbo and Monk and Magnum P.I. and that Gil guy from CSI Las Vegas. Kojak, some would say. That's the detective work that was done by Greg Finley tonight. So kudos to him. Charlie Borges, I texted him. I called him a name, which we can't say on the air. And he said, he just simply responded, damn video feed. He also asked when the HR meeting is going to be because of, I think, the name that I called him, not only today, but in another event.
Well, then.
He's joking, I hope. All right, so the Penguins, and Joel, if you could just make sure that my computer audio here is up. Thank you for that. Penguins cleaned out their lockers today. I don't really know if they actually clean out their lockers or if they just sort of show up and sit there and the media asks them questions and then they just go home. Tea times were probably made for, I don't know, 3 o'clock this afternoon. Mike Sullivan talked to the media. Look, this team is flawed. It is flawed. The last 2.5 weeks, I think, did a little smokescreen on people so that they don't believe that this team is flawed as much as it is. But it is. And there needs to be serious decisions made. There need to be legitimate consequences for what I feel is a massively, massively under-delivered 2 years of Penguins hockey now. And to be real, we could go back even farther than that. I mean, since hoisting the Stanley Cup in Nashville, this team has won a playoff series. One, singular, uno. Un, as the French say. One playoff series. It's been a while now. And I don't know why there's not more people sort of loudly screaming this. That the direction of this organization, and I don't care about Kyle Dubas and what he brought, and yeah, they got Erik Karlsson, they retooled this and that. It didn't work. They missed the playoffs after getting Erik freaking Karlsson. They have Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Chris Letang, Brian Rust. For much of the year, they had Jake Guentzel, Erik Karlsson. Go down the list. This team has names. Some of those names played really, really well, like Sidney Crosby. But there is a flaw to this team. And one of those flaws, I think, at least in part, involves Sidney Crosby. I'm going to play for you some audio. And I think it's a good look at where the perspective within the locker room, within the organization is, or where it should be, is, I guess, the right way to put it. Because what you're going to hear in this audio, I didn't hear from Mike Sullivan after they lost to the Islanders the other night. What came out of Mike Sullivan's mouth was, well, you know, the guys, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, fought really hard down the stretch. They showed who they are. They showed their resolve. Yada, yada, blah, blah. What he needed to say, what he should have said, was that this team's performance, the way that it played, the way that it was coached, was one word: unacceptable. This season was unacceptable. And listen, last year was not good. It was unacceptable as well because they were a talented team. But look, we had the scapegoat, right? It was Hextall and Burke. They were terrible. Idiots they were, we said. Right? Guess what? Team did the same thing this year as they did last year. With a new GM. With one of the best offensive defensemen to ever play the game. And they lost because, A, they are fundamentally flawed in one major department. And it's probably not what you're thinking. You're probably sitting there thinking, well, it's something to do with the power play. It's the coaching, yada, yada, this and that. No. The biggest flaw that the Pittsburgh Penguins have organizationally is that they love each other too much. That is the flaw of the Pittsburgh Penguins right now. They are too obsessed with being buddies and not obsessed enough with winning hockey games and being the best product they can be. It's an issue that starts at the very core of this player group. It's the Malkin, Crosby, Letang trio. Those guys are fantastic players. All three of them should have their numbers up in the rafters one day. Sidney Crosby was phenomenal this year. He was great. But let's call this what it is. This team should have been broken up a few years ago. This core group should have been broken up a few years ago. And it wasn't. It was kept intact. It was then re-signed long-term here for probably now too much money as we look back, at least outside of Crosby, who is underpaid. And it underdelivered last year. It underdelivered this year. And the head coach sits down and says, well, you know, we really showed our mettle down the stretch and really proud of the way that the guys pulled themselves. But, you know, a month ago, he said, we were in a pretty bad spot. Well, you're still in a bad spot. You're not in the playoffs. You're on the golf course. It's fine if I'm on the golf course. You can't be. You should be playing hockey this time of year. You know why? Because you're the Pittsburgh Penguins. Because you spend to the cap. Because you are aggressive every single year. Because you got Erik Karlsson. You retooled the bottom six. You got a new GM, for crying out loud. You've restructured so many things within your organization, and yet here you are once again sitting there doing nothing as the playoffs get ready to start. If you don't believe me in what I say about this team loving itself and loving each other a little too much, listen to one of the players and what he said today. This is Lars Eller, a guy that very much involved in this team. He's in that locker room day in and day out. He played all season. But he's not one of the ingrained, longtime Pittsburgh Penguins. You don't think listening to this that you can't hear a problem in his voice with the way that this team behaves, the way that this team approaches bad moments or tough moments? Listen to this. No, if I could get it to play, that would be a little better. There we go. All right.
I think we had some times during the season where we just got too low, you know, emotionally and quality of play, you know, where we were so far from our best, and that time combined with other things was a little too long, where we didn't we didn't get points, and there was times where we had, I felt like we had a firm grip on plays or on games where we had, you know, leads or even multiple goal leads that we didn't close out. So, you know, a lot of those games where we felt like we were the better team for most of the game. I think you gotta find a way to win those, more of those. You know, those things combined, I think we'd, you know, would still be playing right now. I think when we did play well, we were very capable and of beating anyone. We beat some of the best teams in the league, went toe to toe with them. So we were very capable, but I think our lows were a little too low and for too long.
All right, stop it right there. So, look, all teams go through ebbs and flows, highs and lows, whatever. It happens. Some nights you just you don't get up for the game. It happens. Over the course of 82 games, that it's inevitable. No team is up for all 82, and that's fine. I can live with that. I'm not the type of person that freaks out because a team goes through a rut or goes through a bad game or a couple of bad games or a couple of bad weeks. Like, that happens. The problem is the reasoning behind all of this. And the follow-up here is really good.
Extended lulls, specifically you're talking about the days going into and the days coming out of trading Jake.
Yeah, that was a big part of that, yeah, for sure. I think where we just, there were some games there where I just didn't really recognize our team. That was surprised of how far from our best we were in some of those games. So, you know, that hurt us, amongst other things.
Especially looking at how Bunting came around kind of quickly. I mean, is that particularly disappointing? Because it looked like you got a decent asset there in return.
Yeah, he was great for us. I think there's like, you know, I can't find anybody. There's not really no excuses. We were, you know, most of us were healthy for most of the year. I know we had some injuries, but for our key guys, our best players, and for the majority of the team, we were healthy. Our goalies gave us a chance to win most nights. I think we can only, you know, point the finger at ourselves. Yeah.
Lars, how do you get that mindset out of the room? Did the last 3 weeks give you optimism heading into next year?
Yeah, I feel like there's lots of reasons to be optimism because of how well we were able to play at certain times and the way we finished. So when we decided to and we got over this, emotional low, we picked ourselves up. But I think it took too long to pick ourselves up. It's a little too late, so it was a steep mountain to climb. We gave it a good chance, but then when it comes down to needing help from other teams at the end, that's not a good position to be in. So even though we finished really strong, I think it's like I talked about those stretches early or mid-season or around the deadline. It's kind of that's where you got to look to where we could have been better.
You know, given the, I don't even know what you want to call it, lip service that we heard from some others of, well, you know, the last few weeks, I think we proved that we can be a pretty good team. No. I don't care about the last few weeks. I care about the last few months. I care about the next few weeks. You're not playing in the playoffs. That's what I care about. That's what you need to figure out. This is just fool's gold to me. You know, in some ways, it's reminiscent to like what the Steelers did this year with Mason Rudolph. Yeah, they got hot. It was a nice end of the year. They were able to get into the playoffs, but ultimately they weren't a real threat. And this team didn't even get to that point where they got into the playoffs. Maybe if they did, who knows? If they were playing better. But this didn't look like a playoff team throughout the course of this year. Really, at any point, even in the last 2.5 weeks, it just, you know, it's like the Pirates in September when they're out of the race. All of a sudden, they start playing well. That happens every year, doesn't it? Once they're out of the race, all of a sudden, well, the pressure's off. We may as well just go out there and play. And guess what? You start winning. Other teams may be gripping their sticks a little bit, what have you. And it's refreshing, I guess, to hear somebody at least relatively admit to the problem, the elephant in the room. This team has been, for a while now, run by the players. The decisions that have been made have been dictated by the players. I don't think Sidney Crosby shouldn't have a voice in some of the moves that are made. I think Sidney Crosby, given his status, has earned the right to have input. I don't think that they need to bow down to everything that Sidney Crosby wants and desires because he's emotionally attached to certain people within the organization. Listen, Crosby wants to win. I get it. It's the most important thing in the world to him. I get that. I believe that in my heart. I also think that there can be times where you are blinded by the good in front of you, by the good things, the things that make you feel good, and it gets in the way of the betterment of the overall. That happens. That's life. That happens in a lot of things that happen in life. There are times where you think that you know what the right way forward is because you're the sentimentality, the emotional attachment to it, whatever. But deep down, that's a flawed mentality to have. And living in that world of, well, Jake got traded, I'm not going to play hard tonight. Whether you think that on the surface, whether that's bubbling below the surface, you could hear Lars Eller say it there. He did not recognize the team around the trade deadline and around the trade of Jake Guentzel. Who the hell is Jake Guentzel to force an entire team into a depressed state of terrible hockey for a month? Listen, he's a really good player. He's not their dad. He's not their brother. He's a coworker. I just had a coworker and friend move. Guess what? I went to work the next day and did my job exactly the same as I did the day before he moved. It didn't affect my work. You have to be a professional at some point here. And this was a lack of professionalism from a group of old guys. Look, if they're 19 years old and they're playing juniors and you're really attached and the one guy leaves and you're bummed out about it, maybe it affects you, whatever. This isn't their first trade deadline. They've had guys traded before. They've seen players leave for free agency. You're telling me that Jake Guentzel, was it the milkshakes? What was it? What made Jake Guentzel so incredibly vital to the emotional well-being of the old Pittsburgh Penguins that they just went in a collective tank because he got traded? To me, there's one word that I could use to describe that mindset if that's how it went. And again, this is a player saying that this is how it went. That one word is pathetic. That is a pathetic result of a trade deadline that you collectively said, well, we sold at the deadline. We may as well go in the tank. They were 1-4 in the five games before they traded Guentzel, and they were 2-7 after that. It took them 9 games to, I don't know, snap out of their depression. There are teenagers who go through breakups who get over the breakup faster than they got over trading Jake Guentzel. You want to talk about core fundamental problems with this team? That's it. there is too much of a love affair with the quote-unquote core guys in this team. And part of that is really good. Part of that can mean chemistry. Part of that can mean a good locker room, togetherness, wins, etc. That's fine. When it doesn't go your way, you cannot let that affect who you are as a hockey team and the way that you play and the tenacity, the want to, the desire that you have. And again, I'm not the one saying this happened. One of their teammates said it today. Lars Eller said it today, that around the trade of Jake Guentzel, he didn't even recognize the team that was out there. That guy meant that much to them that they decided they didn't want to play at the level that they needed to play at in a crucial point of the season. They could have survived, as we saw, trading Jake Guentzel because they got a decent player back. Bunting ended up being pretty good for them. But they did him a disservice. They did the organization a disservice. They did you a disservice by saying, we got rid of Jake Guentzel. No more milkshakes for you. No more hockey wins for you either. John in the car. What's up, John?
Hey, living the dream, brother. I hate to just be echoing what you're saying, but this team, in my opinion, and I remember that the Penguins had let a goalie go unprotected. As much as Matt Murray did well for his years, and I remember the Cups, trust me, I was a season ticket holder. But when they got rid of Fleury, that was, in my opinion, the first crack in the armor. Fleury was highly touted since basically the day he was born. And if you watch the guy, he's probably one of the fastest goalies with his legs than any other goalie I think I've seen. And I'm pretty old.
He's still playing, too. Anyway, he's going to come back next year and play.
Well, yeah, now that he's 1,000 years old. and you know, now that, you know, Crosby, he might turn into the Malkin talent because, my God, you know, Malkin fell off the he didn't fall off the earth, but he – we'll say the level of his exceptionalism went significantly down over the last several seasons. And Sid, guess what? It's your turn, buddy. You're 38. You're a hockey god, but guess what? You're not an immortal hockey god. And, you know, Sid could wake up, come to training camp next year, and he could be a total washout. Not that I expect him to be a total washout, but geez, I'm not expecting him to play like he did this year, which was, you know, unbelievable.
Yeah. John, John, appreciate the call. We got to get to our next call and then to a break. I'm going to talk about that after the break, the age thing, because I think it's worth bringing up. Let's get to Francis, though, in Freeport. Hi, Francis.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me.
Good. What's up?
So, before Guentzel was traded, we really had a pretty small chance of making the playoffs. Last year with Guentzel, we didn't make the playoffs. I don't know why these guys would be so attached to a guy who, yes, is young and maybe one of the next great ones, but I don't understand how he can justify the Guentzel being the problem, the Guentzel trade being the downfall to this season, when in reality, I think it's much more than all that.
Well, you're talking about what Lars Eller said?
Yes.
Well, I don't think that's what he's saying. I think what he is saying is the team collectively went into the guys around him went into a funk when they traded Jake Guentzel. I'm not saying he's blaming the trade for them not playing well. I think he's saying our guys did not react well once the trade occurred.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it was a good run. It was fun to watch there at the end. Obviously, it leaves a lot of Pittsburgh fans, including myself, with less to do on the weeknights and a lot less to look forward to. You know, so it's definitely a bummer. But I disagree with John, the caller prior, saying that Sid can't come back and play just as well, if not better, because that's all the dude cares about. And at least we have something positive to build on. So we can try to look forward to a better Steelers season. Maybe the Pens come back next year and do well, and maybe the Pirates win close to 100 games. So as a as a Pittsburgh native and a fan of all those sports, I feel better than I should, I guess.
Hey, keep the optimism, Francis. Thank you for the call. If the Pirates win close to 100 games, I'm going to do freaking cartwheels down the hallway here at the fan studios. But, I mean, that's the way that I viewed those Lars Eller comments. Our team was so emotionally attached to this core group. We have this buddy-buddy bond that when one of the guys moved, all of us just fell into this depressed state of we don't want to, like, we couldn't get off the couch. That's, I mean, again, we're not talking about, you know, you getting divorced. We're not talking about you breaking up with your girlfriend, your fiance. We're not talking about a relative passing away. Those are things, if you get depressed over those things, okay. We're talking about a guy moving to Raleigh. You're going to see him in a couple of months if you want to. You're millionaires. You can go hang out. You can go golfing together when the season's over. Hell, if you would have played well, you'd be playing him in the playoffs, and you could see him then. You could see him seven times, potentially, in a week or in 2 weeks. But they decided that sulking was more important than showing who they really are and really can be. And it wasn't until I think they realized that Michael Bunting was actually a decent player that they said, huh, maybe it's time to move on. There's other fish in the sea. I mean, literally, isn't that what it feels like when you hear Lars Eller's comments? Doesn't it feel like he's saying, you know, we got sad because we knew we were going to break up with Jake. Then we broke up with Jake, and we were sad for a while, and then we decided, you know what, we can get over this. We'll be okay. This is professional hockey. This ain't prom. This ain't your 10th grade romance. Get over it. Be men. I mean, it's sad. It's sad that is what happened to this season, according to one of the players that was in that locker room. All right, we got to get to a break. If you want to jump in on this, 412-928-9370, just some crazy comments today, I thought, from Lars Eller. Fan text line brought to you by Edgar Sider and Associates Personal Injury Law Firm, where they always say, there's never a fee unless we get money for you. I'm Josh Rountree here on The Fan. Talking Penguins, Sports Radio 93.7, The Fan, Josh Rountree. It's The Fan Evening Show. If you missed the last segment, we were talking about Lars Eller's comments today, saying that essentially the group kind of just collectively checked out before and directly after the Jake Guentzel trade, that their friend got traded and they just said, to hell with it. And I don't know. To me, that feels like a lack of professional resolve, first and foremost. And maybe more overarching here, sounds like a lack of leadership to me. And when you have a lack of leadership with a team as old as the Penguins, and with a team with an established coach like the Penguins, that ain't good. You look at this Penguins roster as it currently stands heading into next year. These are guys who are under contract. And again, I think there's a respectable chance that not all of these guys, and a number of them, are not here next year. Rickard Rakell will be 31 this offseason. Brian Rust will be 32. Erik Karlsson, 34. Lars Eller, who we just heard from, 35. Refreshing to hear honest takes on what happened. Sidney Crosby is going to be 37, still playing at a high level, but he's going to be 37. Chris Letang's going to be 37, not playing at as high of a level, and he's going to be 37. Evgeny Malkin, certainly not playing at as high of a level. He's going to be 38. Noel Achari and Riley Smith are both 33. Matt Nieto is going to be 32 early next season. Old, 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 old. You can get away with a couple of 32-year-olds, a couple 34-year-olds, not a couple of 37, 38-year-olds littered throughout your lineup. And as good as one of those guys is at 37, to me, it's not making up for how old this team is in general. And look, if you're going to be old, fine. Have leadership. Be professional. They lacked that this year. And they also have a coach who's been here for a long time now, who apparently is on easy street, doesn't have to worry about his job. It's disappointing to me that it took, I don't know, I guess them realizing that Michael Bunting is a decent player for them to be like, well, we can get over this. We will survive. Maybe they had a scene like the prison scene and The Replacements. I will survive. And they were dancing up on the, you know, maybe they had one of those moments once they realized that they were going to be okay with Michael Bunting and that they could get over the loss of their beloved Jakey. This is incredibly frustrating because this team should be in the playoffs. I mean, they went you-know-what down their leg on a couple of really key occasions. One of them around the trade deadline where if they could have just snapped out of that, they could have been all right. How many times did they blow leads, give up goals late in third periods, overtime losses? They lost a dozen overtime games this year. They were 6-12 in overtimes. It's not even to get into the 4-0 lead they had against Colorado that they blew. The Detroit game where they gave a point away ended up pretty costly. Let's go to Steve in Finleyville next on the Fan. Hi, Steve.
Good evening, Mr. Rountree. Yeah, you hit all the points, man. And like I was telling your producer when he took my call before the break. This is how the toughness of the inside of this team has been questioned before. You may remember Michelle Therrien, who then like halfway through the next year, you can say what you want about it. I'm going to say it. They laid down on him and got canned. That was a team that was in the Stanley Cup playoffs the year before, and they didn't like Therrien. Was hard. It was kind of like a Tortorella, a little less, I think. I don't know. I never played for either one of them, but the point is,
yeah,
they don't like to be told bad things. And Sullivan's just like the gatekeeper over there. Way to work, guys. Way to work. And Josh, it is frustrating because talent-wise, look at the New York Islanders and look at the Penguins. Who's got the better trading cards in their album? It's the Penguins. But who actually played better down the stretch? It was the Islanders. And, so be it. It's frustrating, and this isn't going to change, man. There isn't a third line to pick these guys up. And I'm not putting down Sid and Gino. They are older, and they might be great talent-wise, Josh. They're not great leaders. They lead by example. I hear that all the time. Well, then, damn it, tough it out and get through your buddy being traded. And luckily, Michael Bunting fits in with them. They've accepted him, apparently. Because
I know.
Well, Josh, when he first got here, I forget who they were playing. And Bunting tied the game with under a minute to go. He was in front of the net. There were two dudes tapping their stick on the bench. When you see that happen in other teams, the whole damn team is doing that on the bench, rattling their sticks. They tied the game. Jeff Carter was one of them. And that said a lot to me then. These guys had checked out. And, I mean, they checked back in to clear their way. And it's going to be – this will be all forgotten about next year. Nobody will mention it. But it's unfortunate. I'm glad you're hitting the point, man.
Thanks.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Steve. I was just going to let him go because once he called them the Icelanders, I wanted to hear what else he had to say because I've never heard anybody else call them the Icelanders before, but I'm going to start doing that. But he makes a good point. Like that, how could you not hear? And again, I'm not making this up. Lars Eller said it today. He didn't recognize the team around the trade deadline. To me, that's a lack of leadership. How can it not be? How can you not at that point grab a guy by the collar and say, man up, go play hockey? What this reminds me of with the Bunting thing too, Joel, you ever have like a friend group in college or whatever and you're dating some people or whatever, maybe out of college, you have your relationship friends or your married couple friends once you get older. And then all of a sudden, you know, they break up. You know, two of your friends who are dating break up. And you're like, ah, man, we lost a good thing. And then, you know, the guy maybe brings another girl into the equation. And you're like, well, we really liked Tina, but I don't know if we're going to love Beth. And you got to wait and figure out if you actually like Michael Bunting is Beth in this equation. And Jake Gensel is Tina. You got to wait and figure out if you like Beth as much as you liked Tina, or maybe if you're going to be able to accept her into the friend group. The problem is, this is the NHL. This isn't your friend group. Play hockey. Enough crying, enough wallowing, enough sulking. Go play hockey. It's what you're making millions of dollars to do. Get to a break if you want to hop in, 412-928-9370. There is still one question that needs to be asked here. What happens as a result of this past season? And really now the last two seasons, and really now every season since they hoisted the cup, if we want to talk longer term here, every season since they hoisted the cup in Nashville, where they have fallen short every single year. Josh Rauch, it's Fan Evening Show. The big question that needs to be asked here with the Penguins is this. What now? Look, I could have excused last year. Obviously, they hadn't been winning playoff games, but missing the playoffs, all right, you know, the GM was terrible. The bottom six was terrible. There were bad moves that were made. Well, a new GM comes in. He has to make some swift decisions for sure. But, you know, I remember sitting here back in, what was it, August maybe, when they traded for Carlson. And I remember thinking, this team should be better, right? They should be better than they were a year ago. And I believed that. When they added Erik Karlsson, I thought that they were a better team. And they weren't. They won less games this year than they did last year. And look at the trend here of late for them. Just look at the trend the last 3 years. 46 wins, 40 wins, 38 wins. They're getting worse. They were supposed to be getting better, but they're getting worse. They won in the COVID year, they won the East, as it was referred to then. Then the Metropolitan, third place, fifth place, fifth place. Fifth place? With Sidney Crosby? With Evgeny Malkin? With Chris Letang? The question now is, where do they go? I mean, given the comments that Mike Sullivan made, where he, I don't know, sort of poo-pooed, calling it a total failure or unacceptable, which to me is one of two things. It's either A, he truly believes that they got better at the end of the year and they showed that they can really carry this over and he's blind to the problems at hand here, or he is trying to publicly will into the universe that message so that he doesn't look too bad to ownership. I don't think that they're going to fire Mike Sullivan, but I think they should. We're going back now to, you know, after they won the Stanley Cup in 2017, they won a playoff series, then they lost to the Capitals. First round gone, play-in round gone, first round gone, miss. It's unacceptable. And any coach that doesn't come out and blatantly say, hey, look, with the talent assembled of Crosby, Malkin, Letang, now Carlson. We had Gensel in there for quite a while this year and for the last several years. With Brian Rust, missing the playoffs is unacceptable. And I don't know, ultimately it's Fenway Sports Group. To be honest with you, I still don't know who the hell the owner of the Penguins is. Like, I know what group it is, but I don't know who's in charge. Seriously, who's in charge here? I know Kyle Dubas is the GM, but I would think that a coaching change has to come from even above him. Or there at least needs to be a collaboration into that decision. I don't think Dubas just walks in and says, Sullivan's gone, and Fenway Sports Group says, all right, you're the boss. Unless he truly has that much power, I don't know. I will say this organizationally, it's very weird to watch games and never see a shot of an owner. You ever watch a Penguins game and see them pan to, you know, the press box and you see the owner like they used to do with Mario in his suite or up in the rafters watching? They showed Mario every game. They showed Mario. He was there. He was present. Even Ron Burkle, who was more hands-off as an owner, you'd see Ron Burkle from time to time. He'd be on TV. He'd be present. He'd be a face for the organization. I don't know who the hell is responsible for the Pittsburgh Penguins ultimately. Yeah, it's Fenway Sports Group. It's an entity. It's not an ownership. It's a business. It's a corporation. But it's not a person. You know, obviously when things go wrong organizationally, we talk about Art Rooney. He's the decision maker ultimately. We talk about Bob Nutting. People like to complain about him, certainly. How, if you're Fenway Sports Group, and that's who I have to label them as, and I guess we throw Kyle Dubas into this as well, but how do you look at the run here for Mike Sullivan with the talent that he has had at his disposal and say that he is the right coach for this job? I don't know how you do that. I didn't understand it last year. I didn't understand when they gave the guy a 5-year extension when he had 2 years left on his contract. I'm wondering if they feel a bit hamstrung now by that extension that they don't want to have to pay him to not work.